The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this August 14th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. A little bit of overcast out there today. Still warm outside as we are just about halfway through the month of August. And can I just be honest with you? Today has been a hectic day for me. It's a crazy time around here right now with trying to get high school stuff ready to go for football that starts next Friday and the university stuff that starts a week after, of course, with us airing Auburn High on the radio, Lee Scott on the radio, Auburn University on the radio, our Game Day on Wings show. Like, we got a lot going on around the radio stations, right? Long days, early mornings, late nights, all that stuff. But for the second time in 3 months, I walk outside this morning, and I go to get in my truck, and you know what? It's sitting on an angle, and I'm like, huh, that's funny. Why is it doing that? Because the tire's flat. Twice in 3 months, I've had a flat tire, and not just like, oh, that's low, I need to put some air in that. No, I mean just absolutely flat, on the ground, not able to be driven. It's terrible. Man, it's a horrible feeling. I mean, I don't know if it's worse to get one like while you're driving to run over something and get it then, or to walk out when you're trying to get to work, already maybe running a few minutes late, and you see a flat tire. Shout out to the people here, though. They came and got me this morning. I got to take it in, get it fixed. So that's how the day started, which is not really the best way to start the day. And then it's just been crazy around here, man. There's a lot going on. And all of that caused me to cheat on my diet today, which is not good, but I did it anyway. So, you know, it's just been one of those days. But good news is I got 2 hours to forget all of that and come in here and have a great time with you. And I'm looking forward to it because we're going to have a really good show today. We've got Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 who's going to be with us as he is every Wednesday. Get some updates from Georgia football camp. I want to get his thoughts because this is a growing conversation with more players that are injured around the SEC. There's another one that got hurt. We got news of that last night. So I'm going to talk to him about that and see if Kirby has said anything about you know, being concerned with injuries and things like that. So we'll get with Jordan Hill coming up in just a little bit from Dogs 247. And then it's Wednesday, which means it's Double D Wednesday. Daryl Dappert will join us coming up in hour number two from Locked On Auburn, Auburn Daily. You can catch him on all sorts of things now. And so he'll be with us in the second hour. We'll talk fall camp. We'll talk a little basketball, I have a feeling, as well. So looking forward to both of those gentlemen joining the show. Until then, around then, in between, you can be a part of the show. 334-321-1390. That's the phone line to get you through to me. Call in, be a part of the show. What's on your mind on this Wednesday? What do you want to talk about in terms of sports? It could be Auburn related, something else, doesn't matter. Give me a call, 334-321-1390, or you can just shoot me a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. 17 days until Auburn University kicks off. Can you wrap your head around that? I can't. It's flown by. The summer's gone. School's back in. Practices are happening. And teams hit the field next week around here. And there's still so much to be learned on the high school ranking and the high school level and on the college level. But I have an interesting conversation that I think we can get started with today that a listener gave to me, and we're going to get to that here momentarily, but got a phone call. Let's get the show started. Let's get to the phone lines, 334-321-1390. You're on the line. Who am I speaking with?
Hey, man, this is Shane. How you doing, bud?
What's up, Shane? Good to hear from you.
Yeah, man. Hey, summer is not gone. I wish it was gone, but
temperature-wise, it'll be here till October. You know that.
It will, man. I hate summer. I remember growing up, and it was like it was completely different. At least in my perspective, like it was manageable or tolerant, or you enjoyed being outside. I don't even want to go outside. I don't want to walk out the door.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's one of the things that I actually enjoyed about growing up. A lot of my time in Ohio was the summers are hot, sure, but you actually got this crazy thing called seasons, right? You had a fall,
yeah,
a winter, and even a spring. That doesn't happen down here. It's summer,
nice,
winter, back to summer.
What are those other two words you just said? What's the spring?
Yeah, I know. I can teach you about it on another time.
Yeah. Hey, man, any news on if we're going to try to get a quarterback? I know I think we want to before the season starts, so that's not a distraction. Or do you think that he's going to run with? Hey, I'm okay with Walker White. I was super excited when he came in, and I don't want to just overlook him and like we're looking for the next dude. But I mean, I know we need another body in the room, But I think that guy's going to be great. He pulled in a lot of those recruits for us, too.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those receivers are here because of that guy.
Yeah.
So, I think he's going to be a phenomenal, you know, a good quarterback next year, hopefully. And what is your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so you're asking if Auburn is still planning on taking a 2025 quarterback in the recruiting class?
Right. Or if they're going to do it before the season starts. There were reports that they're trying to get stuff done before season. Is that realistic? Because a lot of these guys aren't gonna commit till December or whatnot.
Yeah, it's interesting because and I've had this thought a few times where so many players now, the growing trend in football and in basketball is these high schoolers want to commit wherever they're going before their sport starts, before their season starts, right? Football literally coming up on just a handful of weeks. Basketball still has a few months. But, yeah, a lot of these guys want to get their commitment done and finalized before their season starts. And then on the flip side of it, too, it does help out the college programs where they're like, okay, I can focus on, Arkansas this week rather than, well, got to make sure I call all my recruits. And you know what I'm saying? So that is a really growing trend in the recruiting landscape. Auburn is still wanting to get a quarterback in 2025. They are wanting to get a high school guy. Of course, some of that has fallen through. Some of it's still kind of up in the wind, but their goal is to still do that. And I think if they don't get the high school guy, they'll get one from the transfer portal because you're going to lose a little bit out of the room this year.
Right. I don't think there's a I'm not too worried about it because I do believe that there's going to be some good names in the portal this next year. And if we have a decent season, 8-4 or something like that, then I think Auburn will be an attractive spot. But what about Walker White? Are we gonna overlook this guy who I think is I've seen tape and he's getting bigger, and I think he's going to be a good quarterback. And I wanted your thoughts on this guy. On his future at Auburn, if there is one.
Yeah, sure. I'll definitely hit on that. Shane, good to hear from you, my
man. All right.
Yeah, we're going to you too. Walker White is an interesting story because he is not obviously the starter, and he at this moment doesn't appear to be, the next guy in. But I do think he could be the future of Auburn. He could. I think he's talented enough. I think he's got the ceiling to do that. And I think Hugh Freeze likes what he sees from Walker White. I'll admit, I like what I see from Walker White. I mean, he's somebody, and Shane mentioned this, where, I mean, forever, it seemed like, he was committed to Auburn and became an extra recruiter on the staff for Hugh Freeze because he loved Auburn so much and wanted so many great players to come here. And I do think he's a big part for a lot of these guys being here in this most recent recruiting class. But if you're Hugh Freeze, in any program for that matter, that has the situation at quarterback that Auburn has, right, you got your starter in Peyton Thorne, and then the future is up in the air. It is a question mark. You have a Hank Brown, you've got a Holden, and you've got a Walker White. And I believe, and from what I'm told, there are some people that believe Walker White is it. They believe that he's going to get here, right? He is here. He's going to get in there, kind of work on some things, fine-tune a little bit, kind of cook on the back burner, and then when they're ready to go, they're going to crank up the heat and let this kid go. Very well could happen. But if there's one thing that I've learned in this new era of football, you can't just bank on that. And I don't think Hugh Freeze will. I don't think that Hugh Freeze and this staff are going to say, well, we've got Walker White ready, and 2 years, he's going to be good to go, and we're just going to put all of our eggs in that basket. I just don't see that happening. And so how this is going to play out is Auburn will try to recruit somebody in the 25 class. They'll probably go and get a transfer quarterback at some point, whether that's next offseason or the offseason after that. You can't just have one dude and expect it to work out. And luckily, as Shane alluded to, Auburn, if they continue to A, bring in the receivers they're bringing in, but B, keep the guys that are already here, then yeah, Auburn's absolutely an attractive place for either a transfer or a high school quarterback. Now, the 25 recruiting cycle, if you will, or process, that's a better word for those of you that know what the quarterback situation's been like, that process has been up and down. And if Auburn gets one, they get one. But if Hugh Freeze has told us anything or proven to us or shown us anything, is they're not going to just settle for somebody. They're going to go after the best. But you better fit what we're doing here. You better belong at Auburn and fit what we're trying to do. Fit our culture. Fit our system. Act the way we want you to act. Be the person that we want you to be. And if you don't fit that, or if those around you don't fit that, then you're not going to come here. You're not going to be a part of this, no matter how good you think you are. And that's really tough to do nowadays, don't you think? That's really, really tough to do. Because in an era where talent is more valuable than ever, where guys are better than they've ever been before in high school football, it's really hard to turn down a good player or to mutually split ways or just kind of tail off a little bit. Because what if you don't get another shot? What if you don't get an opportunity with another quarterback or another receiver or another linebacker or whatever the case may be? What if that was your one and only chance? Well, some coaches are going to take it and hope they can fix it, and maybe they can, maybe they can't. I take Colorado is the perfect example of that. Others, like Hugh Freeze, they're going to go and get who they believe can help them win games and is going to help build the culture. Walker White was that way. Walker White was a guy who, yeah, he loved Auburn, and from Little Rock, Arkansas, wanted to come to Auburn for a long time, and Auburn granted him that, and he's taken full advantage before he even steps on the field for an actual game. He recruited harder than anybody I've ever seen as a commit to a school. It was wild to watch, and it was awesome. I mean, the dude was wearing jackets with receivers' pictures on it to get him to commit here. Who does that? But from a playing perspective and a playing conversation of Walker White, there are those that believe he could be the future, and I think he could, absolutely. Just watch him throw it. His ball has more zip on it than most. When he just rears back and throws, even in warm-ups, his throws look different than those on the team right now. Even different than, yes, Peyton Thorne. There's a lot to be learned. Hugh Freeze has admitted that, right? He's got to learn 11 on 11 in SEC speed, SEC size, SEC strength, right? That's a lot. He's played high-level football, but not like this. But that's not expected anymore. And that's a lot to ask of a freshman quarterback nowadays. But isn't it nice, Auburn fans? Isn't it nice to where Auburn's not in this position to where it's like, all right, Walker, get out there. Good luck. You got three games to figure it out, and then we play Arkansas. True freshman, we're going to need you, man. Because that's what Auburn's had to do in the past, and it didn't work out like we wanted it to. Now you have Peyton Thorne, who's experienced. You even have a Hank Brown, who has a, you know, is young, but has proven, I think, that he can be a guy in the future. Right? And you've got dudes in the room, even Holden, who is younger, but now Auburn has options. And they will continue to give themselves options as long as they can. But Shane, in a long-winded way to answer your question, nobody's overlooking Walker White, I promise. And I think he has more potential and a higher ceiling than Holden or Hank Brown. Whether that all comes together and whether that pans out and whether that's even at Auburn, we're going to have to wait and see. But they will constantly continue to go for a quarterback in the high school ranks and in the transfer portal as well. All right, let's get to our first break here in hour number one. Great question by Shane to get the show started. Would love to hear from you as well. 334-321-1390. How about a question of the day? We haven't had one of those in a while. This was submitted by a listener earlier today. We'll have that for you before Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. All that coming up on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Question of the day. We have not done one of these in a long, long time, and this one is a lot of fun. And it's not a new question, especially with the betting world that we live in now, sports betting world, I should say. But this is a really fun question and topic, and want to get your thoughts on this. We'll probably visit this a few times during the show today. You can call in at 334-321-1390. Maybe easier in this just to text us at 334-784-1067. John in Auburn proposed this earlier, and it's just fun. It is. If you had a $100 bill, all right, if I walked up and I said, here you go, I'm giving you right now a $100 bill, and I need you to bet on who the first touchdown scorer of the season will be for Auburn football, who would it be? Who is going to score the first touchdown for Hugh Freeze and Auburn this season? You would like to say in game one, but nothing's a guarantee, right? No, I'm kidding. If Auburn doesn't score a touchdown in game one, then we got bigger problems, right? Who, in your opinion, who scores the first touchdown for Auburn in 2024? Shoot me a text, 334-784-1067. There's about a million options here, which did not seem to be the case a year ago, 2 years ago, right? There was a obvious answer and maybe an obvious two or three, and that was pretty much it. But it could legitimately be 10 to 12 different guys. And remember, who scores the first touchdown, I mean rushing or receiving. And so that could be rushing as in a running back. It could be a receiver on a jet sweep. It could be a quarterback on the QB keeper, right? Or even just a scramble. There's a lot of different options here. It could be receiving or passing or rushing. And, well, not passing, just who will physically score the first touchdown of the season. And, you know, I'm scratching my brain a little bit. We got texts flying in. Got one that says $100 on Jarquez. Got another one that says Jarquez. I think that's a pretty safe bet. The odds are probably not in your favor because that would probably be the betting favorite, right? For those of you that know betting lingo, for entertainment purposes only, maybe it's a $100 Monopoly bill, right? Just to keep it safe, right? Jarquez would probably be the betting favorite. And that makes sense. Auburn moves up and down the field. You get inside the 10, 15, and you want to reward the guy. And Jarquez is probably going to be him or Damari, right? Are going to be the two that are your workhorses in there. But you have to ask yourself the question, is Auburn going to score, in the red zone? What a crazy idea that is. And if they do they toss it to Rivaldo? Do they toss it up to him? Do they throw just a back corner fade to Cam, Coleman, Perry, KLS? Who could it be? Because you got to think about that too. You got to think about return on value here. Jarquez is an easy answer for sure. And you're probably right. Or, I was alluding to this too. What if it's a Peyton Thorne keeper? What if it's a keeper from like the 7-yard line? And whether it's a called play or whether it's just a, oh crap, gotta go, and he tucks it and runs. That would be a good sign too, though, wouldn't it? That would be a good sign, and I'm okay with that. Because what that would tell me is Peyton Thorne made a play when there wasn't a play to be made, right? When the original play breaks down and doesn't work, that would tell me that he made it happen and improvised with his legs because he's a sneaky good runner. I don't want people to forget that. Peyton Thorne is a sneaky, fast guy. He just didn't do it a whole lot last year, and you know, whether he was unable to change the plays or was not didn't have enough time or nobody was open, and when they were, they dropped. I mean, whatever the case may be. Could it be, I mean, it would just be a storybook start if it were Cam Coleman. How about Cam Coleman on just a 60-yard dart? You know what I mean? Like, that would make Jordan Hare go absolutely insane. It's already going to be crazy because it's game one, and the sun's going to be down, the lights are going to be on for most of the game. Probably not to start, but for a lot of it. So the place is going to be going nuts anyway. Or, how about this? Is anybody bold enough to take that $100 Monopoly bill that I just gave you and put it on a defensive touchdown? Anybody willing to do that? Anybody willing to bet on Keontae Scott pick six, scoop and score by Eugene? Anybody willing to do that? The return on that investment would be phenomenal. If Auburn's first touchdown of the year is on defense or special teams. How about a kick return touchdown? How about a punt return touchdown? Your odds are going to be terrible. But if you win, you're going to get paid. And you're going to get paid a lot. I'm probably not going to bet on that, especially because Hugh Freeze has already told us, and we saw this a little bit in the scrimmage on Saturday and in the practice at Jordan-Hare, how special teams is a little bit of a concern right now in terms of who's returning the ball and making the right plays on returns, on kicks, or on punts. And there's still some question marks on who all that's going to be. So that may not be the safest bet. May not be the best way to go. But if you're just now tuning in, question of the day. I give you a $100 bill in Monopoly money. Who is the first touchdown scorer of the season for Auburn? It's just so many options. There's so many. Any of the receivers, couple of running backs. Could it be a quarterback keeper? And for bonus points, how does it happen? I've said this a few. Could it be Perry? Could it be Perry or Cam on a fade route in the corner? Could it be a long ball? Could it be an opening 75-yard run by Jarquez Hunter? Could it be a goal line play from the one with Damari Alston over the top? Isn't this fun? Isn't this awesome? There's so many different ones. I don't know what I want to do. Oh, we got one that says Rivaldo. Okay, so we got somebody in on Rivaldo, too. I am going to go against the cusp here, and I'm going to say a Peyton Thorne keeper. I'm going to do it. I'm going to say a Peyton Thorne keeper for Auburn to score their first touchdown of the season. Why? Because why not? Is basically how I look at it. Hey, let's get to the phone lines really quick. What's your answer? We're getting a break.
Hey, sorry, man. This is Shane again. I just want to say, man, I'm so freaking excited. Like, you just kind of pumped me up. It's what is the last time you felt this way about Auburn? Beginning the season, like I'm giddy. I got the goosebumps. Like
I love
all those guys can legit score that first run, first touchdown.
You're right about that. Shane, we're getting a break, my man. That was such a good call. That was such a good way to get to break. I'm glad I got you hyped up, and hopefully other people are sharing your excitement too. Thanks for listening and calling. We're getting to break. Jordan Hill from Dogs 247 joins us after this.
On the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into the first hour here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goetz with you on the Auburn Opelika sports leader. And every Wednesday, this guy joins us from Athens, Georgia. He is Jordan Hill. He writes for Dogs 247, the 24/7 sports site covering Georgia athletics. And Jordan, happy Wednesday, my man. It's great to hear from you. I've got the people fired up about Auburn football on this side of Alabama, and I have a feeling they're getting into that same mindset over in Athens.
Definitely. The countdown is on. I know there's just 10 days until we have any college football. That's sort of week zero. So everybody's fired up. Everybody's ready to get this thing going. And, Georgia's got a good situation where that first game is a marquee one with Clemson. There's plenty to be excited about. And I know everybody's ready to get the season going.
Yeah, you and I have talked about that opener a couple of times in our weekly conversations, but it's funny because my general manager here at the network, he's a huge Clemson fan. It's a Clemson grad. He was telling me literally today that Clemson's going to shock the world. Clemson's going to beat Georgia week one. And we were looking at some of the betting lines, and it's about 13.5 right now for the Dogs. Is there an overconfidence with Georgia here? Do they think they got to go in and play really well to win? I mean, what's the Georgia side of this?
Well, I think they understand what they're getting into playing this kind of an opponent. And I go back to 2 years ago when they played Oregon, and I want to say the final of that one was 49-3 or something.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
that.
I forgot about that.
It was totally one-sided. So I think it's a situation we've heard a few players through fall camp talk about this, that, you know, they'll take on whoever they're playing. I mean, last year they opened with UT Martin, and obviously that doesn't have the same juice, but they admitted that, you know, it helps having a game like this to start your season. I mean, when you're out there grinding in 95-degree weather, when you're out there sweating, when you're trying to beat your opponents or beat your teammates in these position battles, you know, that it helps that you kind of have that marquee game on the schedule. So I know one thing, Georgia's not going to take it lightly. I think I've said this before, that I do think it helps Clemson. If you're going to play Georgia, I would want them in week one in a neutral site, where I do think there will be, you know, a good chunk of Clemson fans, although I'm sure a lot of red and black will be in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. But, you know, there's going to be a lot that Georgia's still trying to figure out. There will be position battles that are ongoing in week one. So, you know, I feel pretty good that Georgia's going to win that game, but I wouldn't be shocked if Clemson covers, because Georgia's got a lot to learn, and a lot of the questions that Georgia's going to be facing, they're only going to be able to be answered once one of these games gets underway.
Well, a lot of those questions are trying to be answered through fall practice and a couple of scrimmages. I believe Georgia's had one scrimmage. They've got another one coming up this Saturday. I ask you this a lot, but I'm going to go ahead and take a pretty good guess that you don't have access to the scrimmage this weekend.
Sure don't. Didn't have any of the last one either. Didn't even get to watch them stretch, Jacob. You know, I like getting a good sense of how flexible this team is, but no, we had to kind of gather up intel from some of the folks who were there and kind of word by mouth figure out what happened.
Sure. So if you can remind our listeners what some of those notes were from that first scrimmage, and then what I guess you are sort of looking for and hoping to hear from the second scrimmage on improvements from scrimmage one to scrimmage two.
Well, going to the first scrimmage, I think the biggest thing was that Georgia feels really, really good about its running back depth. That was a big question, because they lost their two top rushers from last season, had Branson Robinson coming back from a torn patellar tendon, and had to bring in, you know, three freshman running backs who were unproven. And going back to that scrimmage, Branson Robinson was running some with the first team behind Trevor Etienne. Roderick Robinson, who is a sophomore, he played really well, had a big touchdown on a wheel route. And the freshmen have impressed, kind of leading the way with them is Nate Frazier, who's a guy they got out of California that they feel really good about, and I think is poised to you know, he's not going to be one of the starters behind a guy like Trevor Etienne, but I do think he's going to get a good bit of work. And then besides that, I would say some of the other big topics from that scrimmage. Defensive backs sound like had a good day. Dalen Everett, who Auburn fans will remember, had a really big game in that game against Georgia last year. He was very impressive. I was told he did not give up a completion in that scrimmage, so very impressive. And then Dan Jackson, a guy that, frankly, a lot of us had kind of written off, a former walk-on. He really looks like he's poised to start at safety opposite of Malachi Starks. Now, K.J. Bolden's played well, but Dan's a veteran. He's a super senior. He's been around and was a one-time starter before. He had a good scrimmage as well. So looking to the second scrimmage, I think my biggest thing is going to be continuing to see progress from the defensive line. We heard some pretty good things about some of those guys, Nazir Stackhouse, Christian Miller, but it continues to be a position that I'm watching closely because there were questions even before camp had started just about, you know, how capable this group was. And now Jordan Hall's banged up. Warren Brinson's been missing time. So they need to have another strong scrimmage. They need to show up, be ready to go, and prove that, you know, even if there's some unknown commodities in that group, that they're ready to go and they're ready to play at a high level.
I want to focus on the defensive side of the football for a second, which is where you just were on the D-line. I want to move just one step back to the linebackers, where Georgia has started to flirt with what Alabama did so well, bringing in just those big, heavy, thumping linebackers, and then, of course, moving them on to the NFL on Sundays. Is Georgia going to continue doing what they did a year ago and bringing guys in from the last couple of years? I mean, is that to be expected this year to have some of the best linebackers in the SEC once again?
Definitely, and it's a situation where when you look at the guys they just signed in the 2024 class, I still can't really get over that they signed so many good guys, 2 5-star Justin Williams and Chris Cole, and then a 4-star in Chris Jones that is very good as well. They had signed 3 linebackers in the class before that were high caliber, and I thought, you know, there's no way you can sell another group of guys to come in and follow the leader, but they've done it. And we've heard good things, especially about Justin Williams and Chris Cole. And then 2 of the guys that were in that previous class, C.J. Allen and Raylan Wilson, have done really well. C.J.'s a guy that had to step up when Jamon Dumas Johnson got hurt last year. And he's been banged up a little bit. I think he's all right. I figure he'll probably be able to go in this scrimmage on Saturday. But yeah, I mean, they've done a very good job. I would say if there's any position that has become a lock when it comes to recruiting and maintaining talent, it would be inside linebacker, which is also the position that defensive coordinator Glenn Schumann coaches. As good as they've been recruiting tight ends over the years, inside linebacker, they have done a very good job of just stacking talent, convincing guys this is where you want to be. And, you know, Smile Munden's back for another year. I believe he'll be a starter and a guy that they can count on, but there is a ton of depth at that position, and I think you're going to see several different guys get involved over the course of the season.
And that's with you know, guys like a DeMarcus Riddick, who ended up coming to Auburn instead of Georgia, but yet they've still found a way to get some of the best linebackers in the country. It's wild to see what they're doing. And again, I'm starting to compare it to what Alabama did so well, and Auburn's trying to do the same thing here. And look, it's no secret for those that listen to this show, linebacker is my favorite position on the defense. I always see it as one of the most important, because a lot of times, Jordan, you know this, that's where the communicators lie, who make adjustments on the field in real time.
Definitely, and go look at Georgia's defenses that have been really good these last few years. You know, part of it has been a big defensive tackle with Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, but
sure,
they've had some outstanding linebacker play going back with N'Kobe Dean, even going back to the team that was runner-up in Kirby's second year. Roquan Smith, I think he had like 137 tackles that year. They continue to get really good play, and tough losing Jamon Dumas Johnson because he was a veteran, a guy that made a lot of plays, but having Smile Munden back, having those other guys back, I think they're loaded at inside linebacker again, and I anticipate several of those guys are really going to stand out this year.
He writes for Dogs247 and joins us every Wednesday here on the show. Jordan Hill with us on the phone lines. Something that I told my listeners that I was going to get your thoughts on, because unfortunately this topic and this conversation is growing by the day, because there are major players around this conference, Jordan, that are missing out or going to be missing out on this upcoming season because of season-ending injuries. You've seen it happen at a couple of SEC schools, and the big one is Texas, who has lost two major running backs. I want to get your thoughts first about what maybe could be the cause of this, or if it's just a coincidence, and then has Kirby said anything about any concerns with his guys getting hurt there in Athens?
Yeah, it's been sad to see some of these guys that have had their seasons in before they even begin. And you mentioned Texas losing two running backs. It's one of those things that I think in one part we do see this every year. I mean, that we see guys that wind up getting hurt in the lead up to a season. And, you know, I'd have to probably look at the numbers to just see if it's just anecdotal that it feels like it's more or if it really has gone up. But, yeah, Kirby talked about it a good bit on Tuesday. And Georgia, knock on wood right now, has been lucky that, you know, I don't think any of the injuries that have been sustained to date are severe. I would say Jordan Halls is the most, and they think he'll probably miss Clemson, could maybe miss the second game, but it's nothing long-term that they think is going to keep him out. Kirby talked about what he felt like was the deterioration of football, and his thought, and this is kind of more of a theory than anything he had sort of backed up, was, you know, less guys playing in high school and maybe high school programs not being, you know, quite equipped to get everybody set up. And part of that, he feels like it's sort of been a trickle-down effect where, you know, they've recruited well. They get all these guys. But once they get to Georgia, you know, they're not quite ready for what's coming their way. And a big part of that, much, you know, not necessarily injury-wise, has been guys that are just ready to go get reps in-game and be ready to play big roles right away. So, the injury part of it, I think it's one of those things that it happens every year. Maybe there are more than we usually see, but it's one of those situations. Kirby was asked how you sort of balance it, and he said, you know, whoever figures out how to practice hard and practice with physicality without getting somebody hurt is going to make a lot of money because there's no real science to it, you know, because you want to go out there and work really hard on the practice field to get ready for Saturdays because, if you try to go out there and say, well, we're not going to tackle at all, then you're going to see a lot of broken tackles when you get in the game. So it's definitely a tough situation. And it's just one of those things that, you know, it's kind of trial and error more than anything. And you want guys to stay healthy. And you want to try to get guys ready for, you know, we're still talking about what will be a longer season than we've ever seen in college football before.
Yeah, that's a ditto to what Hugh Freeze was saying last Friday when he was talking about it. Was he admitted, he's like, look, we got to tackle. Like we've got to get better at tackling right now. But he said, it scares me to death. It keeps me up at night. He said, I get home, you know, 10, 11 o'clock, and I get on social media and you find out that somebody around the conference just lost their starting running back. And he admitted, it's like, man, that keeps me up at night, and rightfully so. And he was saying the same thing, where how do you find the balance of we've got to hit, we've got to tackle, we've got to be able to take a hit or a tackle, but not get guys hurt at the same time. And so I was glad to ask you about it, and intrigued to hear that Kirby had some comments about it as well. And then with Texas in particular, because that's the one that has gotten really magnified here in the last couple of days, two of the running backs gone, out for the year for a team that pretty much was picked to be second in this conference all this offseason. I mean, what impact does that have on what Texas could be? I know you cover Georgia, but for the big matchup of what that could be, I mean, what a huge loss, both of them.
I mean, definitely, and definitely the guy, I want to say it was Baxter, that was going to be the leading running back, and a guy that, you know, I had as one of my top running backs in the SEC going into this year. So it's going to be a situation where they're going to need someone to break out, and I do think that they've got other backs. I don't think they're totally, you know, bereft of any options at running back, but I mean, to lose those two guys in August, like we said, they're getting ready to play in the SEC for the very first time, so there's going to be a lot of physicality. And I'll be honest, you know, I kind of wonder about that matchup with Georgia. I mean, when they get to play, because going into this season, I looked at Texas' offense and thought that, you know, they can match Georgia step for step. My biggest question really is Texas' defense and more so their defensive line. But, you know, I can't help but kind of wonder if now that Alabama game for Georgia comes a little bit more into focus when you look at a game that maybe the Bulldogs could drop. But, you know, we'll see how the rest of this fall camp plays out for Texas. Let's see if a running back sort of emerges. But there's no doubt, I don't think you can kind of wave away those injuries, especially at a key position when, again, getting ready to play in the SEC for the first time and, like we said, getting ready for a very long season.
Georgia plays at Texas October 19th, which do we know I don't think we know the time of that game. Do we know what time slot that's going to be in, Jordan? Do you remember?
Not off the top of my head. I want to say it got evening slot.
I'm sure it did.
I have to go back and look.
Yeah, I mean, that would make the most sense, wouldn't it? And of course, they've got the Alabama game in Tuscaloosa. That's a night game. We know that. That's 7:30 kick. That will be that's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm sure Georgia will not get any favors, and they'll play a night game in Austin as well. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. He's with me every Wednesday here on the show at 2:30, talking all things Georgia athletics. And right now, it is all football, my friend. Tell people where they can find you and all your fantastic coverage of the Georgia Bulldogs.
Appreciate that, Jacob. Dogs247.com, on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at Dogs247. So, yeah, we're in the thick of it. I guess we're about halfway through the month, which is hard to believe, but going to have plenty of content in the next few days. As you mentioned, Georgia will have its second scrimmage on Saturday. See what we can glean out of that. And then before too long, we're going to start previewing the Clemson Tigers.
Man, that's so crazy to think about. I'm ready for it. Fans are ready for it. And while we may not be ready to crank up our work schedule, it's the best time of the year, and we're getting into the thick of it. So thank you so much for your time. As always, we'll have you back on next week.
Sounds great. See you.
Thanks so much, Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Go check him out at 247sports.com or just type in Dogs 247. If you are a member of the Auburn Undercover site, our friends Jason Caldwell and Nathan King and Christian Clemente, all those guys, you get access to the Dogs 247 site. So you may as well go check it out. Get caught up. Jordan writes an article, seems about just about every day. I read it. I read it every day just to know what's going on over there in Athens, but I bring him on here once a week for you to get caught up as well. We'll take our final break, come back, wrap up hour number one, and then propel ourselves into hour number two. A fun conversation about stadium atmospheres, the loudest stadiums in the SEC. And it's not going to come from me. It's going to come from Kirby and Carson Beck. That's coming up in hour two, plus Daryl Dapperidge of Locked On Auburn. You may not go anywhere. Don't go. Don't leave. Stay right here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Couple of more minutes here in hour number one. Thanks to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 for being on with us, as he is each and every week, talking all things Georgia athletics. Check him out at Dogs247.com. We have just a few more minutes in this hour. We'll get into hour number two, and as I alluded to before break, going to have a conversation about loudest stadiums in the SEC. And you will not be surprised by the answer, but you might be surprised on who it's from. And I already told you that it's Kirby Smart and Carson Beck. There's an audio clip that we got pulled from the SEC Network, and excited to play it for you. It's about 40 seconds long. We'll have that for you in hour two about just what they said about Jordan-Hare Stadium. So we'll have that in hour two, plus Daryl Dapperidge will be with us of Locked On Auburn. And as we are getting out of hour number one, just saw this across the timeline. According to 24/7 Sports, their bowl predictions for college football, Brad Crawford and 24/7 Sports put out their bowl projections for the SEC. They have South Carolina going against SMU in the Gasparilla Bowl. That's exciting. Texas A&M against Arizona in the Las Vegas Bowl. Florida and Tulane in the Birmingham Bowl. So, sounds like 24/7 Sports has them going over their win total. Would that be enough to keep Billy Napier around? Would a Birmingham Bowl appearance for the Florida Gators against Tulane be enough to keep his job in Gainesville? I don't think so. Kentucky and Houston, battle of the similar logos in the Liberty Bowl. Oklahoma and Washington in the Music City Bowl, that's fun. Tennessee and Iowa in the ReliaQuest Bowl. I hope that's how you say that. Missouri and Michigan in the Citrus Bowl. And I skipped Auburn. They'll be in there in a second. LSU and NC State in the Gator Bowl. Again, these are projections from 24/7 Sports. And they have Auburn making the Texas Bowl against Kansas. Interesting. All right. Their playoff predictions, Alabama at 9, Texas at 6, Ole Miss at 5, and Georgia at 2. That would put Bama versus Penn State at Penn State. Oh, my gosh. Could you imagine? Could you imagine Alabama walking into a whiteout in Happy Valley for a first-round playoff game? Goodness gracious. Texas would host Liberty, Ole Miss would host Notre Dame, and Georgia would have a first-round bye. So that was a lot at you at one time, but that just came across my timeline, so I wanted to read that to you. Is Auburn really going to be in the Texas Bowl? I don't know. I don't know, man. Missouri and Michigan, that could either be really good or really ugly. I feel like LSU fans are going to be disappointed with a Gator Bowl selection, but I can't get over if Alabama's a 9 seed playing at number 8 Penn State. Whoo, man, that would be so much fun. And we'll have a better idea on how Alabama would perform in that game with how they perform against Wisconsin on the road early in the season. All right, hour number one is in the books. Stick around. Hour number two, we're talking loudest college football stadiums and why? The obvious answer is Jordan-Hare plus Daryl Dapperidge and more. That's all coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two on the Wednesday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go and catch up with the podcast. You'll find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. That is where you can find the podcast. You can listen to the show live there every day. You can listen to our live events there every day, which, by the way, we'll have college football games on this radio station all football season long on Saturdays, NFL games on Sundays, and so be sure that you're tuning in for those. And if you're out driving around over the weekend or if you're at the house and want to catch a football game, you can hear those right here on ESPN 106.7. And also be sure that you have our Radio Alabama app downloaded on your phone, whether you have Apple or Samsung, whatever the case may be. Radio Alabama, that is our parent company in Sylacauga. We took all of our radio stations and put them in one friendly app for you. That way you can listen to ESPN for sports talk and live events. You can listen to AU100 for Lee Scott Football with Christian Griffin. You can listen to Wings 94.3 for Tiger Talk, Auburn High Football, Game Day on Wings, and Auburn University Football. There's a lot happening on 94.3 and all of our other wonderful stations around the family. So be sure you have the Radio Alabama app downloaded as well. In hour number one, we talked with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 about Georgia football, about fall camp, their second scrimmage coming up this weekend, expectations, what they think will be different from scrimmage one to scrimmage two. Also talked about injuries with Jordan Hill, not with Georgia in particular, but about the SEC and how there seems to be just injury after injury after injury and how horrible it is. And to an opponent that Georgia has on their schedule, the Texas Longhorns. So really fascinating conversations with him about that. Also, we got into a question of the day, which is a lot of fun, which we can revisit if we have time here in hour two, and a whole lot more. So be sure you go and listen to that later on today at ESPNAU.com. Here in hour number two, we've got, about 10 minutes or so, and then Daryl Dapperich will be with us from Locked on Auburn and Auburn Daily, a fan favorite on the show. So we'll talk to him about everything from last week's practices and scrimmage on Saturday for Auburn, some recruiting things as well, a little bit of basketball Daryl told me he wants to get into. So we'll have him for 30 minutes on Double D Wednesday. Before we get into content, though, I want to remind you that hour number two each and every day here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7 is brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them bringing you the second hour of the show each and every day here on ESPN. Well, there was a conversation that started floating around about the loudest stadiums in the SEC, and this conversation comes up all the time. There's a debate. It's a debate that'll go on until the end of time, right? And side note, just got a text saying Double D is the best. You're right. Double D is the best. Daryl Dapperich is the GOAT. This conversation goes on all the time. Who's the loudest stadium in college football? Who's got the toughest atmosphere in the SEC? Well, Ben Taylor, who is he's a contributor to ESPN, and he's the host of Auburn Opelika This Morning over on News Talk WANI. He grabbed a piece of audio from Marty and McGee from Kirby Smart and Carson Beck talking about the loudest stadium they have ever been in and they've ever been a part of on the road in the SEC. I want you to take a listen. I want you to take a listen to this. It's about 45 seconds long about what Kirby Smart and Carson Beck said is the loudest stadium they've been in the SEC. Then we'll react to it. Take a listen.
Loudest stadium you've coached in?
I have to go with Auburn. I mean, the games that I've been involved in there, triple, quadruple overtime as a player. First time overtime ever in college football, I was in that game. Loud as can be, okay? Fast forward to being a coach at Alabama, kick six, loudest I've ever heard it.
Overall, it's Auburn Stadium, overall. Throughout the whole game, you know, they stuck in it, and that fourth quarter, it was boom. We're in the huddle, and I've got all 10 of the other guys. I mean, their faces are right next to me, and I'm screaming at the top of my lungs, and they still can't hear me. That's how loud it was.
What'd you think about that? Huh? That's a little sneak peek of what Marty McGee may have coming up on some future episodes. But Kirby Smart and Carson Beck talking about how Auburn is the loudest stadium they've ever been a part of. Kirby has been there multiple times, and a lot of people forget he was there a part of that kick six, right? He was there when that happened. And then you heard Carson Beck talking how everybody's huddled up together. I'm yelling right in their faces, looking them straight dead in the eye, and they still can't hear me because of people like you who go to Jordan-Hare Stadium in the fall. That's what makes Jordan-Hare different. Everybody says it, right? Everybody says that Jordan-Hare is just different. And you've heard it from guys like Kirby Smart. Nick Saban's even had comments about it. Les Miles has said things about it. I mean, some of the most legendary coaches in the game or in the history of the game have had problems winning at Auburn, right? Winning against Auburn in Jordan-Hare. Because we can't explain it. There's some weird Auburn juju that happens when you step inside the stadium. If the lights come on and the sun goes down, it gets amplified. It's sort of like Death Valley, right? It's like LSU. It's like the Swamp, but it's just a little bit different. I would be willing to say that a night game at LSU is more intimidating than a night game at Auburn, but a night game at Auburn is more weird and more freaky and has a chance for quirky things to happen more than any other stadium in the country. Is that fair to say? Like, when you hear about having to play a night game at LSU, it's like, oh, crap. You know, like, you know it's going to be tough. You're going to be dealing with crazy people. They're passionate, overpassionate at times. Like, that's a wild place to be on a Saturday night at Baton Rouge. But Auburn just has that little extra something that you never know what it's going to be. Whether it's a kick six, whether it's a bobbled football five times, right? Whether it's, heck, even in reverse, juju, fourth and 31, right? Weird things happen within those walls. But for Kirby Smart to come out and say, yeah, that's the loudest stadium by far. He is, I mean, he's been everywhere, right? And think about Carson Beck, too, who is a very experienced quarterback now. And for them to both come out and say, yeah, it's Auburn, no doubt about it. I'll admit, I have not been to all the stadiums around the SEC. There's a lot of them that I have not been to. But the pretty consistent answers are Auburn, LSU, and Florida at times. I have friends that have said Florida's the loudest place they've ever been, ever, in the swamp. And I think that comes and goes. I think LSU is only really crazy at night for whatever reason. But a game at Auburn, when the team is good, when the team is good, and you can, yes, you could use that blanket statement on any, I guess, any team, really. I mean, nobody, no stadium's going to be super crazy when the team's not good unless it's a special occasion. I look back to the Auburn A&M game when Cadillac was the coach, right? That's a special occasion. But if your team is 5-5 and it's an 11 a.m. kick against Vanderbilt, no, it's probably not going to be anything crazy. But if Auburn is good or competitive or has a chance to upset somebody, yeah, that stadium is going to be insane. And I've been to stadiums outside the SEC. I was at Penn State when Auburn played there, and it was loud. It was. They were crazy. But it didn't compare to some of the top moments I've had in Jordan-Hare. I have friends that have been to stadiums outside of the SEC, outside the Big Ten, out west. Even like Clemson, which gets crazy at times, Florida State too, but I don't know, man. Weird things happen over there. Weird things happen inside of Jordan-Hare, and it's one of the greatest home field advantages in college football. It's no debate. It's top five. Top five. And when it's at its peak, right, fourth quarter light show, music's playing, swag surf goes, lights are on, sun is down, right? It's a little bit chilly in the air. Doesn't that just get you fired up? Shane, if you're listening, I know you probably just wrecked your car in excitement, man. Hopefully you're all right. Because that's what we look forward to. That's what, and look, I have a unique perspective on this because I was a student when COVID was happening. And so for that season, I attended games as a student where we were the only ones there, spread out across the stadium. It was terrible. It was horrible. It was no fun. I remember the Arkansas game. We stood in a flood, a monsoon, for 6 hours, but there was nobody there. And playing a road game didn't mean anything. The only thing it meant was you had to travel. You didn't have to play in the atmosphere. You didn't have to worry about a crowd. And so, no, I don't attend a lot of games now just as a fan. I do here and there, but even covering games and hearing it and seeing it from the press box, like, it's a special place. And it has such an effect on the opposing team. And an Auburn team gains so many points, or even unofficial points, just by playing at home versus playing on the road. And that's special. And to hear Kirby and Carson Beck talk about that, I thought that was pretty cool. So shout out Ben Taylor for pulling that clip for us. All right, we got to get to break because the legend himself, Daryl Dapperich, will be with us when we come back. We're talking Auburn basketball. We're talking Auburn football. And you just never know what else we're going to get to when Daryl joins us on the phone lines. Daryl Dapperich will join us after this here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
Are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, and it is a lot of your favorite time of the week. It is Double D Wednesday with our man Daryl Dappert from Locked On Auburn, Auburn Daily, and Montgomery Radio Legend. My man, it's great to talk to you here in the middle of the week, and we're getting closer and closer to football season.
You can really start to just feel it. And you know, the last couple days, for a little bit, it got a little bit cooler at night, and you're like, here we go. You know, we're 2 weeks away. Because I know Auburn doesn't play week zero, but there's college football on in week zero, and it's still like Christmas morning. I get it. You know, watching Auburn play is for everyone that's your listeners and for around here is a bigger deal. But the great thing about living in this part of the country is college football is such a religion that even when your team's not playing, it feels like a national holiday. And so I'm ready. And week zero, you know, let's go. I mean, let's go. Ready for all that. We're getting closer. It's just amazing how fast it flies. And it seems to really pick up steam. And I think you can vouch for this, Jacob. When you leave SEC Media Day, It just seems to be a blink and then we're going. I can remember as a kid going through school, and once Halloween was over, it just seemed like Christmas came right around the corner. And it's kind of like what you feel like now with week zero upon us and getting ready to go for college football. It's just a great – it never, ever gets old. It just doesn't. Year after year, every time this part of the season comes around, it's so much fun and so exciting.
Yeah, and it just seems like that they're starting school earlier and earlier now and starting college football earlier and earlier now with week zero, which used to be almost non-existent. There would maybe be some of the, you know, FCS games and things like that. But, I mean, you've got Power 5 schools playing in week zero, Daryl. I mean, you've got a big game that they've made a tradition overseas now that I think is pretty exciting.
Very underrated point because – you know, when I was growing up following college football, you did not kick off the season until the Saturday before Labor Day. That was it. And the season ended New Year's Day with all the New Year's Day bowls.
Right.
Okay. So now you're starting week zero, August 24th, which is 2 weeks earlier than you used to start. And you're going all the way into what? The middle of January? Is that when the national championship game's being played, I think? That's an additional 3 weeks of the college football season. And, you know, you think about the NFL adding an extra game, these things just keep getting extended. And I make the analogy, it's why people start putting up Christmas decorations in Hobby Lobby the day after Halloween is over with. We want to milk every ounce of traditional things that we love in this country, in our culture, in our traditions. And college football is one. And so they have found a way in the NFL and in college football to extend that season 3 weeks, 4 weeks out. You make the analogy also about school starting. That I hate. I absolutely hate. And I've said that I get it. You know, high school football starts earlier because of that. But, dude, I just really have a problem with kids getting on a bus the first week of August. And I know we're taking it. But when you mention that, it just – if that means football starts a week later, then let it start a week later in the high school ranks. Because I have a problem with that. I really do. And I think it robs kids of their summer and recreation time. I don't think high school athletes should be kicking off football seasons on August 20th. It bothers me.
Yeah, well, especially in this state, man. It's too hot to be playing football.
You can do it in Minnesota. Do it in South Dakota. I get it. Do it up in Massachusetts. I mean, the polar opposite of that is how the NCAA used to do baseball, college baseball schedule.
Right.
Because up north and up in the Northeast, you couldn't play college baseball games in February or March. So their season would either start later and they'd play less games, or now how the NCAA gets around it is they just schedule all these northern teams to play southern teams and southern tournaments. I think there needs to be a flip side of that from a safety standpoint, and maybe, just maybe, in the you know, the Sun Belt and these places where it's really, really hot. You know, I know growing up in Arizona, they would not allow the season to kick off until the Friday before Labor Day. And it was still 100 degrees. But like they say, it was a dry heat. But at night, it wasn't bad. At night, it would get to about 80, and so it wasn't humid. But still, I just, you know, you bringing up the school thing and football starting earlier, that is just one area where it doesn't appeal to me that we've extended the football season. At the NFL level, great. College level, great. High school athletes, I'd like to see it pushed back. Even if it means, Jacob, playing a little bit later into the fall, because that's the greatest time to play high school football anyway, where you're in the stands and your girlfriend's there and your family's there and they're in sweatshirts and it's cool and it's cold outside in November and you're playing football with something underneath your pads that's warm. That's the time to, because down here you're not going to be playing in snow. That's the time to play high school football, where there's chill in the air and it's crisp. Dude, when it's 93 and I really have a problem with it. I get it. I understand why they do it, but it's the only aspect of organized football that bothers me, that these kids that are 15, 16, 17, 18 are playing this early.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. And it's wild to see. I mean, there are Georgia high schools that get started this week playing football. And then for us here locally, Auburn High starts next Friday. Lee Scott starts next Friday. I mean, it's here. It is upon us. And week zero of college football right around the corner. And think about this too, Daryl. Week one of college football is not just on Saturday. They've expanded that from Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, yeah, Saturday, Sunday, even into Monday.
And somebody like you that calls high school football, okay, that does the play-by-play, does radio, you know it better than anybody. For the next month and a half, your broadcasts are interrupted by heat breaks.
Yep.
And even if you don't get heat breaks, kids go down with cramps where you're having to go to commercial and stop play. You know, you stop play for 5 or 10 minutes to get the kid hydrated, to get him off the field because he's cramping. And so, I don't know. I think you push that back a little bit, you can alleviate some of that. And you're right about, you know, football starting Wednesdays. I mean, you literally, between the NFL and college football and high school football, there is not a day in the fall that there's not a football game on.
Which is great. I mean, we're not complaining. It's just a different time.
Yeah, it's just a different time. And it's not, the funny thing is, it's not oversaturated. You know, we don't feel like it's too much. And I thought I would, growing up in an era where we had games on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Yep.
Saturday was, you know, college. Sunday was the NFL. Monday was the NFL. And oh, by the way, the Friday Night Lights thing. What bothered me was when I moved down here to Thursday night high school games. I'm like, what? You got to go to school the next day. I mean, you know, part of the thing about playing on Friday nights is game's over, get out to the bonfires, hang out with your friends and your girlfriend and celebrate that victory and know the next morning you could sleep in and there was no school. You ain't doing that when you play on Thursday.
You're right about that.
So sometimes new isn't always best.
I think that's a good way to put it. I think that's the best way to put it with this new era of the sports calendar that we are currently in. And we're going to talk a lot more football coming up in the next segment after our bottom of the hour break, because we're going to talk about Auburn and the scrimmage from Saturday and fall camp notes and things like that. But there was something that you wanted to hit on with us today on the basketball side, because you and I have talked quite a bit about how this non-conference schedule for Bruce Pearl and the Tigers is probably the hardest in the country, and it's by far the hardest in program history. But you wanted to talk about a game that's not even a part of the actual non-conference schedule. It takes place before the season.
Yeah, you know, it could really get glossed over and lost in translation with all this. But look, if you want to get a clue or a peek behind the curtain, it's just how confident or how good Bruce Pearl feels about this basketball team. We talked about the non-conference schedule. Look at the exhibition game that was announced. They're playing Florida Atlantic, who was just in the Elite Eight 2 years ago. I know Dusty May has moved on, their head coach, but still, this is a team that's typically scheduled Alabama State, AUM. Not a knock against these programs. I've been involved with both of them. Alabama Huntsville, that's what he's usually scheduled at Neville Arena to kick off the season in an exhibition. Bruce Pearl is scheduling Florida Atlantic. I mean, if that doesn't goes to show you, number one, what he feels like the potential this team could be, and number two, how he wants to season them up for the tournament, I think this speaks volumes. And it doesn't need to get glossed over or not put the right emphasis on it. It's big. It's important. And people think Daryl needs to get drug tested. Why is an exhibition game big? It's not. You got to read between the lines. There's a bigger message here that's being sent with scheduling Florida Atlantic for an exhibition game.
Which, I mean, I feel like has been your kind of announcement and your stance on the entire non-conference schedule, which is Bruce Pearl believes in this team and he trusts what they have. And I think he can see the potential of what this roster is going to be. And I'll add on to that, Daryl, you play a team like Florida Atlantic who has a lot of talent. Yes, their head coach is now at Michigan, who has a fantastic roster, by the way, where Trey Donaldson will be a point guard. But you have FAU coming in for an exhibition where if you win it, great. If you lose it, doesn't matter. But you've got to get prepared for those non-conference games because you play big boys early in that schedule.
Great point. You're reading my mind. You just mind-melted me because my next point was going to be the other reason why it's important is you don't normally play a non-conference schedule right out of the chute like that.
Correct.
So you want your exhibition game to get you ready for that. So that's the evolution of that is perfect. You're playing Duke. You're playing Houston. Houston right out of the gate. And you're playing the Maui. You're playing Houston and the Maui Invitational. You don't want to have fool's gold and blow it up on somebody that you actually blow out 40 feeling good about yourself going into the Toyota Center. You bring somebody in like Florida Atlantic who's going to test you, is going to expose you, is going to show some things you need to work on because you jump right into an absolutely brutal non-conference. Very good point, Jacob. Underrated point. That's another reason why you bring somebody in from an exhibition standpoint that's usually, you know, that's a more tougher opponent.
And you used the word that I was thinking of was they're going to test you. FAU will test Auburn. Will they beat them? Probably not. Are they more talented than Auburn? No, probably not. But you're going to have to play them. You can't just roll in and treat it as a scrimmage or an exhibition game if you want to learn on things. And that's what's important here, too, before we get to break, is this is not, hey, let's go in and try to win this thing. Bruce Pearl and company are going to say, okay, let's work on some things. Let's see where we're good and where we're not, because all we've done is play ourselves for the last 2 months. It's time to see what we can do against other big-time opponents. So I'm with you, man. I like you making that point. Add FAU to what's not technically the non-conference schedule, but you may as well add it in there because of what it means for what this season could be for Bruce Pearl and Auburn basketball. We'll go ahead and take our bottom of the hour break as Daryl Dapperidge from Locked On Auburn joins us here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
Back here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Got a few minutes here left on the Wednesday edition of On the Line and a few more minutes with Daryl Dapperidge, Double D, who joins us each and every week on Wednesday afternoons. You can catch him a couple of times a week on the Locked On Auburn podcast. You'll also find his written work because he's in his journalism era on Auburn Daily, and he does radio hits all across the state and I'm pretty sure across the country at this point. He's growing like a weed. And so the thing that we're talking most about right now, Daryl, is the fact that Auburn football kicks off in just a couple of weeks. And it's crazy to think about, but you had a scrimmage, you had an open practice. I say open, it was for the media and for On to Victory donors that were at Jordan-Hare Stadium on Saturday. Your overall thoughts and breakdown of what was seen, what was shown, and what's been said so far about that scrimmage on Saturday.
Well, I kind of went into that, you know, trying to reserve judgment because we knew that it was going to be scripted. This scrimmage was very, very heavily scripted, and it was supposed to be very much heavily leaned on the conservative side as far as play calling, intermediate routes, under routes, that kind of thing. Letting Thorne get comfortable with this new receiving core. But what we came away with it was a couple things. Number one, that all the hype for this receiving core has been based around the two transfers and two of the four freshmen that people call the freeze four. And I have said for months
having seen Malcolm Simmons in person against Wetumpka last year, the only receiver out of the four that I laid my eyes on physically, I thought, if there's three better than him in this class, then holy crap, because this kid, Malcolm Simmons, was hard to keep my eyes on. I mean, he had the it factor, speed, elusiveness. Well, it's becoming apparent now to Auburn fans and Auburn media and the Auburn coaching staff, he's going to be tough to keep off the field, even and Bryce Kane as well. So you are going to see truly all four receivers. There might have been some mumbling and some, you know, maybe some chatter that maybe one of them would get redshirted, and I don't believe that's going to happen at all. I think all four are going to play. I think all four are going to get snaps along with Cam Brown, Robert Lewis, Keandre Lambert-Smith, and I think you're going to utilize six, seven, eight receivers. But everybody that I talked to was in agreement that Simmons really, really showed out and is pretty much set to have an impact. I think the defensive line and the edge, the bucks, I guess they call them, getting push and getting pass rush is very encouraging, because I think this secondary has a chance to be really, really good. And anytime you make the quarterback uncomfortable, release the ball off rhythm earlier than he wants to, this secondary can eat. And when they do, you're going to give yourself a chance with an offense that's trying to find itself, better field position. So I think Auburn really needs to have a kind of year defensively where they're like plus 10, plus 15 on the turnover ratio, and it starts with pass rush. You don't want to leave your secondary on an island with the quarterback having all kind of time to check down and, you know, hit safety valves and that kind of thing. So I'm very excited. There was a couple of injuries, and I think people held their breath. Falk went out with a shoulder issue, but he got held and pounded to the pancake by Jeremiah Wright, but he was back and healthy. Austin Keys, who's battled some injury problems. But see, that's where your depth at linebacker comes into play. I want Keys on the field. But with Gote and Mayusi, you know, and Riddick and Woodyard and Asante, you've got enough linebackers, inexperienced linebackers, to overcome that. You don't want to see anyone injured. Keys is a big part. We saw how the defense looked a little bit different last year when he came in halfway through the year. But I think that's been the overall impression: depth at linebacker, pass rush, and then the emergence of Malcolm Simmons.
Yeah, Malcolm, I mean, he was visibly – I was there on Saturday. I was very hot and trying to find shade just like everybody else was at Jordan Hare. But Malcolm was the guy offensively that just kind of shined. And everybody's had the breakdown that, you know, nobody expected Cam Coleman to be a big part of it, because you don't – as hard as it is to hide him and keep him a secret, they're trying to do that as much as they can, I feel like. Daryl and Perry, I think, had a really good day too. And I want to ask you this question, because you've been covering this team for a long time. When's the last time you saw Auburn, or at least we had the expectation that Auburn was going to utilize six, seven, eight different receivers throughout a season? There's been a lot of comparisons to the 04 class or the 04 team that had some, you know, three or four really good guys, but when's the last time you saw an Auburn team that we had the game plan of, we have eight different receivers that we could see this year?
Never. I think the Auburn has gone four or five deep before and been happy to do that with the Courtney Taylor, Ben Amamanu, Devin Aromshadu, and Anthony Mix team. That was four really good receivers. And then, you know, some in the, you know, mid-90s with Frank Sanders and Willie Gauthier, Tyrone Goodson, and Thomas Bailey. I mean, that's like what you had, and people were excited to get three or four from a production standpoint. And I think Auburn has the potential to really, like you said, I've never seen this, throw six receivers at you on any given Saturday where you do three receiver sets on one possession or one drive, and then the next three come out, keep everybody fresh, and another, you roll another three out, like hockey going over the boards. And so, and even within a potential drive, you run three on, three off. I mean, it's going to be very difficult for defensive coordinators to understand, you know, what direction, what angle, what Auburn's going to be doing offensively with its receiving core. I think everybody is pretty comfortable in what they perceive the starting three to be the two outsides in the slot.
Sure.
I mean, it's KLS, Coleman, and Robert Lewis. But you don't drop off when you go Camden Brown, Malcolm Simmons, Perry Thompson. You know, I mean, and you still got Caleb Burton that could be in the mix. I mean, it is absolutely unprecedented. Now, you got to produce. I mean, it's right now it's a numbers thing and it's on paper, and you got to produce. You can't have the drops that you had last year. You got to win some of the 50-50 balls. You got to high point the football. You can't expect Peyton Thorne. You know, help him out. I mean, he's going to throw a shoulder that's going to be a little bit underthrown. Come back to the ball. High point the ball. Like I said, 50-50 balls that Auburn has struggled with in the past. When those things start to happen, then you got a chance for Peyton Thorne to really kind of emerge and progress where he needs to. And then the running game is going to be there all year. And the depth is beautiful. But no, I can't imagine. I can't even fathom. What it'd be like running six or seven out there every game.
And that was going to be my next point was, out of all of these receivers, I'm not saying this because I don't like any of them. It's just a factor of math. One of them is not going to work out. Somebody's going to tail off and get lost in the rotation. I have my predictions on who that is. I've said it before. But somebody's not going to be as good or be as effective as we think they're going to be. And guess what? That's okay, because just like you were talking with linebackers and DBs and whatever, if one doesn't work out, it's not the end of the world, as it has been in years past, or God forbid somebody gets hurt, right, Daryl? I mean, look across the board at this roster. If a linebacker goes down, it's not okay that they got hurt, but from a playing perspective, Auburn's fine. Same thing with receivers, and that's just such a relief to cover for this team. But, man, think about the coaching staff. That has to be a relief for them, too.
Well, it gives you options. How many times – it's going to be a short leash scenario is what it is. Okay,
that's a good way to put it.
How many times last year did we see a particular receiver or two get the dropsies and then be right back out there on the next drive, and it drove everybody crazy? They're like, well, it's because they had no choice.
Yeah.
They felt like they had to keep running them back out there.
And hoping that they corrected it.
Yeah, not so this year. You're going to see receivers on a very short leash. You don't block like you're supposed to downfield. You don't get separation. You run the wrong route. You lollygag through a play, through a route. Remember last year when Hugh Freeze talked about too many receivers jogging through their route?
Mm.
You see that, you see the dropsies, and you're going to see that person on the sideline. They don't have to keep running them out there. They have options. They have depth. And so I think that's the iron sharpens iron scenario. I think they all will push each other. But there's not going to be time to placate and babysit. If you go seven receivers, they'll shorten it to five if two can't do what they're supposed to do and still have a lot of depth. And I think it's not only injury-related, it's performance-related too, where you don't have to screw around and keep running the kid out there that's not doing what you expect them to do from a level.
I like that. And there's going to be people that say, oh, that's not fair. Shouldn't they deserve a second chance at this
fair?
Level? I mean,
no, look, fourth and 31 wasn't fair. I mean, so let's stop with this. I mean, you know, Of course they deserve a chance. And when you run them out on the field, I'm not saying that you bury them and don't ever let them go on the field again, but you sit them for a while and let them understand that this is not the way it's drawn up. You can't jog through your routes. You can't continue to drop the ball. And then you get them at practice, work them hard, let them get out there again. But during the course of a game, when you're trying to win a football game, you've got options now.
And I think you said it, iron sharpens iron. And look, this is an old school way of thinking, but competition makes everybody better, and it weeds out the ones that don't deserve to be there or don't need to be there. It is the way that I look at it, because some guys can't handle competition. And you know what? That's fine. And Auburn has that for the first time in a long time. And it's not just the receiver room. It really is across the board. One more thing before we let you get out of here, Daryl. Everybody has kind of, speaking of the offense, everybody's kind of worried because they didn't look good and the notes weren't great and the defense had a fantastic day. What are you looking for between now and the start of the season, where there will be a couple of more scrimmages? I doubt media will get access to those. But what are you looking for or looking to hear in terms of improvement with the offense before the opener on August 31st?
Well, you know, the old adage is defense is always ahead of offense, and that's true. And that's not just a
a cliche. It is absolutely factual. But what I'm looking for is to see new wrinkles added. I think from now until Alabama A&M, Hugh Freeze and Derek Nix and Ken Austin will put things in. We'll start adding more stuff to the offense. I found out today from a pretty good source that Peyton Thorne didn't have the opportunity to change the play at the line of scrimmage last year, that he had to wait for it to come up from the booth from Phillip Montgomery and then signaled in. He couldn't go up to the line and change the play. Well, that's why so many times Auburn couldn't get the freaking playoff.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff is what you need to see added and get refined and get honed from now until August 31st. And Alabama A&M, all due respect, great opponent to do that. You're going to go vanilla. You're not going to show much. You're probably going to see a lot more against Cal. And then Auburn will probably revert back to going vanilla again in New Mexico before they have to take Arkansas on in the first SEC matchup. So just adding new wrinkles, working on communications, letting Thorne come up to the line of scrimmage, read and react, change plays. I mean, we know the RPO system, not to be confused with the read option, because a lot of times people get confused in that, but Thorne has the option to hand the ball off or to pull it and throw it. And that is where, at the line of scrimmage, it is so apparent you get the right reads to do that. Because if you misread something and can't get out of the play at the line of scrimmage and cannot change the play, and you're handing off into a situation where they're keying, or you're throwing when they drop back into coverage, and if you'd have handed the ball off, they would have had 10, 15 yards of open space. That's the key. From now until then, get him to read and react and to understand and recognize at the line of scrimmage.
Tell me who breaks it down better than Daryl Dapridge. I don't think they exist. I don't. I don't think anybody can do it better. Who makes it entertaining, informational, and just factual. How about that, huh? Always love having Daryl Dapridge, Double D, with us on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Tell the people where they can find you, because you're adding so many things. I can't keep up.
Sure. Well, Monday morning, 7:10, with our good friend Ben Taylor on WANI. With you, Wednesday afternoons, 3:15. I'm doing a weekly morning hit now in Mobile, WNSP, out of there, their sports talk. And then Wednesdays and Fridays with Zach on Locked on Auburn. Then we've started this new venture that I'm a part of as far as a moderator, contributor, a new website message board called The Barn. Charlie Five's a big part of it. Zach is. Go check it out. It's a really, really cool community. We're all on there. We talk Auburn sports. We drop some nuggets a little bit, and it's just a good time had by all. And Taylor Korn from the Next Round Live, all that stuff. We're all part of that, but it's a really cool little community. And I think it's done really well in the first 5 days. People seem to enjoy it and seem the interaction.
Awesome, man. We appreciate you as always, and we will have you back on next week. That is Daryl Dapridge from Locked on Auburn, Auburn Daily. Go check him out on social media as well. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it up here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Man, isn't Daryl just a lot of fun? You just never know what you're going to get into with Double D. And he always brings the heat, always brings the thunder. And it's just such a joy to have on the show, and even more so a joy to have in my life, man. He's such a good dude and has helped me so much in my very young career. So always appreciate Daryl taking the time throughout the week to talk to us for 30 minutes, man. He's the only guest that other than our guest that we have in studio for an hour at times, but our only guest over the phone. How about that? That joins us for 30 minutes each and every week, and you can find him at Locked on Auburn, Auburn Daily, and you heard him mention there, they've got a new message board, so go check that out as well. It's been a wonderful show today, and I was honest with you at the beginning of the show, and I'll be honest with you at the end of the show. I needed this today. I did. I needed this show today. It's such a blessing to be able to come in here for 2 hours, and no matter what's happening in the station, outside these walls, in life, I mean, it doesn't matter, because this is an opportunity for me to step into a room for 2 hours a day and not worry about that stuff and not worry about it. And it doesn't make it go away, but this kind of hides it for a minute. I compare it to going to see a movie or something, right? Do you ever do that? You ever have that time where you're just like, man, I got a lot going on. I need to take a break. Let me go see a movie or go for a walk. This is very therapeutic for me. And so I appreciate you. I do. I appreciate you being here. I appreciate you listening. I think it's been a great show today. We've had Daryl Dappertz with us. We had Jordan Hill with us. We talked about the loudest stadiums in the SEC and in college football. Had some audio from Kirby Smart and Carson Beck, about a 40-second clip of them talking about Jordan-Hare being the craziest place they've ever been to. Had a fun question from a listener about who is going to score the first touchdown for Auburn this season. If I gave you a $100 bill, which I won't have because I got to go get a tire replaced, but if I were to give you a $100 bill and say, hey, bet on who you think is going to score the first touchdown this season for Auburn football, who would it be? We had a really fun discussion about that and a whole lot more. So if you missed any of the show today or any of our previous shows here during On the Line, you can go and listen to those on demand as a podcast on our station website at ESPNAU.com. All right, so go check that out. You can listen to the show live there every day. And be sure that you have the Radio Alabama app downloaded on your phone. That's our new app. The old ESPN app doesn't work. All right, the ESPN 106.7 app is done. We merged all of our stations into one. So download Radio Alabama today. Coming up on tomorrow's show, it's Thursday, so we have Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. We'll get more updates from him, his thoughts on a couple of different topics, and continue to get information in terms of the Auburn Sports Network, what we need to know for the upcoming season, because Tiger Talk's right around the corner, kickoff on the Plains is right around the corner, all right? So we'll have him on, and then Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, will join us once again, as he does every single Thursday, and then it's a free-for-all Friday. I have no idea who's going to be here on Friday. It could be Uncle T-Bone, it could be Christian, who knows? You really just never know who's going to roll up in here on a Friday afternoon. And so we'll have Free for All Friday. Who know, again, couldn't tell you what we're going to get into on that show, but that'll be 2 hours of craziness. And then next week for me is game week. For Auburn High, it's game week. For Lee Scott, it's game week. High school football is just about a week away. It is mind-boggling to think about the fact that high school football is next week, and college is the week after that. And you heard Jordan Hill say earlier, I think we're like 10 days out from college football in general. So there's still a lot to cover. There's a lot to get to between now and then. We read you off some bowl projections today, too. And I don't know if Auburn fans, I don't know if you're going to be happy with what 247 predicted us to be in our bowl game. LSU's probably upset about it, too. But we'll have some more of that as we go through the rest of the week. But stick around, because Bill and Dan will have you for 2 more hours for The Drive, part of our 7 straight hours of coverage here on ESPN 106.7. Thank you again for being here. Means more than you know. I appreciate you. Appreciate your support and everything that you do. Just tuning in each and every day here on ESPN. I am out of here. I'll be back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.